Are you ever in for a treat today on the Daring Dreams podcast? Today's guest is Kimberly Spencer, an award-winning high-performance trauma-informed coach, TEDx speaker, founder of Crown Yourself, and the CEO of Communication Queens. She's also the best-selling author of Make Every Podcast Want You. Today we're talking about all kinds of things, including podcasting and how to make money using your podcast. We're talking about those subtle nudges that kind of chip away at you and get you to redirect your path. We're talking about why flashy success doesn't always mean sustainable business, and a lot about the subconscious identity, which I find completely fascinating. And I am so excited to welcome my guest today, Kimberly Spencer. Thank you so much for being on the Daring Dreams podcast.
Hey, Haley. It's so good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. So we're going to dig right in because you're phenomenal. When I read your bio, I was like, I don't even know where to start with this fascinating woman. Because you have just done so much. So I'm going to let you start by first telling us, what are you doing now? What businesses are your focus now and why?
So right now, I'm like, if you hear my voice and it's a little whispery, I just want to preface that me and all my kids just got over a bad bout with like the flu and laryngitis. So I'm a little bit more raspy and coughy than normal. That's the perk of having children, is like they're little disease cesspools that they could, like, they're so amazing and they build your immunity. But right now I'm running my home of three beautiful children, 8, 4, and 6 months.
My goodness.
Yeah, I know. They're amazing. Okay. And then I have my two businesses, Crown Yourself, I've had for 9 years. It's a high performance coaching company. We really focus on the subconscious identity, not only of the founders, but of the business structure itself. And then from that business back in 2022, we birthed a second business because, like every human, like when you have a second child, you might add a second business to it.
Of course.
And it really stemmed from the success and growth that podcasting and guest podcasting specifically gave me while I got stuck abroad with my family in Australia during COVID. And guest podcasting turned out to be our greatest form of lead magnets to generate and build our audience and build actual revenue for our company. Like we tracked and we did over $250,000 in new business generation from just guest podcasting alone. And so from that, I was like, well, if I got these results, I'm sure other people can as well. And so we built it. Initially, it was a done-for-you agency where we did end-to-end podcast booking for our clients. We were industry agnostic. We had clients that were bookkeepers, biohackers, real estate investors, and it worked successfully for getting them booked and getting them into greater conversations, booking bigger speaking gigs, getting client referrals, because we tracked it. Come last year, I was pregnant with my third child. I was about to launch my now best-selling award-winning book, Make Every Podcast Want You.
Yeah.
And I went on this speaking tour for the book, got it featured in New York Times Square and all the big things. And I came home and I got diagnosed with borderline anemia. I was burnt out. I looked at our P&L and I said, oh my God, this business and the way that it has been running, even though on paper, because you see everyone on Instagram sharing like, it's my, you know, 50K a month, 100K a month. Even though on paper, I could brag about, you know, the success we were having. But I was like, monetary success, like revenue success doesn't mean jack, you know what, without profit and cash flow. And it was a cash flow suck. And what I saw was, I said, this model is not working for me. And it wasn't working into my next stage of my journey. And so I let go of 85% of my team, which was heartbreaking and super hard. And we pivoted the model into a done-for-you consulting model, where we now work with podcasters, authors, influencers, and founders to support them and build in leveraging visibility as an asset for their business, not just as a nice-to-have or a hobby or a side hustle, or like, here's my book, here it is out in the world, now what? As I've seen many authors do since, you know, becoming an author.
That's like, what I did.
Yeah, right? It's like, here it is. All right. Now it's done.
Wait, I have to market it. No one knows about it.
Exactly. And so now what we do is we do done for you consulting, where we set up our clients' systems. We build the systems. We train their team. If they don't have a team, we support them in the hiring process with finding the right team members and people to really support you in leveraging guest podcasting to grow in your business and the business of selling your book, which should be your primary lead magnet.
Wow. Okay. So you're doing both. So let's keep talking about the podcast, but then I definitely want to get back to the Crown Yourself and the subconscious kind of stuff, because that stuff absolutely fascinates me. But let's talk about the podcasting, because I've had a few different guests who do podcasts. And of course, this is a podcast. Right now, for me, it is my absolute favorite platform, because I am so tired of inauthentic marketing. And yeah. And I think that's like a common thread. Like, everybody's tired of it. So we've got to figure out a way out of this mess as leaders in this industry. And so for me, podcasting, it builds a relationship. It allows people to really get to know you. I absolutely love it, but I'm not monetizing it for myself. So tell me some of the tips that you have, or the things that your company would do for people to help them figure out, how do you take this great asset of yours and turn it into something that's actually not just like, I do this because it fills my bucket, it fills my heart. It's not really helping marketing on purpose right now, but I will always do it as long as I possibly can, because I love talking to people like you, right? But wouldn't it be great if it played double duty here? So what do you guys do to help with that?
So basically, let me backtrack and tell you with the story. The first book, that personal development book that I was ever handed, was when I was 17 years old. And it was actually by my acting teacher, which I was like, why are you handing me this book about habits? Like, back then, I wanted to be a Hollywood star and be the Clint Eastwood of my industry. And after getting my first screenplay co-written and like produced and distributed and up by Lionsgate at 24, that's when I pivoted into having my e-commerce company. I was president of an e-com company for 2 years, and then I had a successful exit, and then I launched my coaching company. So I have a background in hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And with the idea of, and one of the things with Stephen Covey's The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, one of the tenets that has stuck with me for 2 decades now is begin with the end in mind. And most people start a podcast because they're like, I feel this is the right choice. And I'm like, but what is the outcome that you want to achieve? And so same with the book. Like, we all have that book and that unique desire, and that, you know, I think every person actually has a book in them, whether it's a fiction book or like a romance novel or an epic saga or like a nonfiction development book of some sort. I think everybody has a book or a podcast in them if they choose to go down that road. But looking at it from, what is the end that you want to have that podcast do for you and for your business as an asset? And if you think of it as an asset, then it has to have an ROI for the amount of intention. And podcasters put so much love and attention into their podcast. This is why in my book about guest podcasting, I say, like, do the best that you can to promote the episode. Like, show up. And that's the number one complaint of most podcasters, is they're like, I had this guest on and they didn't share the episode. Like, they didn't even click the invite or accept button for to be a contributor for the Instagram post.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes. And how is that podcast serving as a conversation starter for the three types of people that you want to be having conversations with in your business? You always want to have conversations, one, with potential mentors. So people that you can learn from, who are farther ahead than you. That is one of the best ways to have a podcast, is to leverage it as a mentorship tool that you obviously, of course, distribute. It's not a pick your brain and then dump it and never like release it. It is a tool and an asset that you in integrity are sharing with the world, but let yourself be cracked open. Let yourself receive guidance. Get that person on your podcast who's, you're like, oh my gosh, I really want to learn from this person because they have expertise or they're farther along than me in these areas. And I have had amazing mentors become very dear friends of mine, and it blows my mind the success that they've had, far beyond what I've done.
Yeah.
And yet I'm like, they're my friend. Like, that's really cool that person is my friend. beyond that, then you also want to have conversations with colleagues. This is where you get some mastermind together and come up with ideas. And I don't just say colleagues as in your own industry, but maybe colleagues of similar income levels in different industries, because that's how you can start to gather blue ocean strategies. If you're not familiar with that term, it's a familiar marketing term. The book has been around for like decades. It's called Blue Ocean Strategy. And basically the concept is that when you swim in a blue ocean, you're a shark, you're hungry. If you go into a red ocean, everybody's already eating those fish. But if you go into a blue ocean, there's no other sharks there. And so you get to have like the buffet. So we want to create a blue ocean strategy. And how you do that is you borrow from other industries and look at what they're doing that are attracting clients, getting traffic, and you see how can I leverage that industry's success for my own? Key example was building my coaching business. One of the things that I didn't see many online coaches doing was leveraging location. And I started out like having Yelp. I was like, well, let me just build my Yelp presence. And that alone brought me clients. And that was something that not many online coaches teach or say, because you got to be visible. You got to be on Instagram. And I'm like, well, you are in a location. And people in that location, I'm sure, probably need your services, even if you have a virtual-based business. So that was a blue ocean strategy that I saw and that I leveraged from having a fitness studio when I was 19, because that was my first business, was having a Pilates studio because I had to have something to support myself in the entertainment industry.
Yes.
Yeah. So my first business was teaching Pilates as a freelancer. Within a few years, I went off and had my own private studio. And I did that while I was building my screenwriting. And then once I had that screenwriting success, I was like, oh, I don't want this anymore. I want it in a different way. Like, and if it's meant for me, it'll come back for me. But I didn't want it in the way that I was being told that the industry said I needed to have it. And I was like, no, not for me.
Okay.
But that
is a thing to do, actually, Kimberly, because I would have assumed that you had spent a lot of time and effort learning that craft, doing your first screenplay, and then just being like, yeah, I'm not.
I mean, I'm honored that the film, it's called Bro. It starred Danny Trejo. It's I don't think it's on Netflix anymore, but it's like still available. And it's changed at least three people's lives, like significantly transformed them.
Wow.
And it's opened so many doors for me. And I'm so grateful for that experience. It's how I also met my husband. So, I mean, I felt like there's an intuitive nudge that I get where I feel like something's run its course. And when I'm like, nope, that's run its course. And I believe that if you're able to let it go and have that surrender, then it'll come back for you. But we digress. You asked for the third thing about monetizing a podcast is then you also have the potential clients. So one of the ways that my podcast, Crown Yourself, has attracted clients was I started interviewing my former Pilates clients on my show, and they got to experience the power of not just me teaching them Pilates, but me asking them really powerful, in-depth questions where they're like, can I have more of that? Like, I realized I got benefit from the exercises and the workout, but what they also got to see by just having a conversation was they received value from the time spent that we would have in a Pilates session in conversation. And when I would separate that, and when I was first starting my show, which was 6 years ago, that allowed them to open the door to like, oh, I'd like to work with you now as my coach, not just as my Pilates instructor.
Okay.
And that changed the game. And the same, you can do the same with your own podcast. If you look at your niche and who you target, for example, on the Communication Queen podcast, which is associated with our consulting agency, we interview a lot of authors. And those authors have come on, shared about their strategy. And I'm very transparent. Like on this call, I'm also going to open up and show the backside of like, let's find those holes in your strategy. And sometimes people come off that call that is a podcast interview. The audience love it because they're getting to kind of see behind the curtain. They're getting that peek. And the podcast guest likes it because they're like, oh, I actually got value from that conversation. I actually got value that I can actually put into play in my business. What other value do you have? And so there's power in the value of conversation. And so those are a few ways that you can strategically place your podcast. And look at, and a lot of times what I see is where people are struggling is they're having too many conversations with colleagues. And they're having too many conversations with colleagues in the same industry, close to the same niche. And in that way, then you're not getting new clients and you're not talking to potential mentors. So you don't have the possibility of greater growth, so that's where I see a lot of podcasters get stuck. The other place where I see podcasters get stuck specifically is they say yes to so many people. They say, and I know I did the same thing as a guest. I was like, ooh, they like me. They want to come on my show. And then I'm like 16 interviews booked out. I'm like, oh my God, we have to edit these and produce these. And I'm like, no, I should have said no to like at least half of those.
Yeah.
And that's something that you learn with experience. The same is true with having your own business. Like eventually, as you first start getting clients, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm getting paid to do what I love. And this is amazing. And then as you go along, you're like, oh, that's a client. I should have been aware of that red flag. Or that's a client I probably should have like said, you're a better fit for someone else. Or, oh, I can solve this problem, but it's not in my zone of genius. It's a problem that's maybe in my zone of competence, but it's not really what I do expertly well. And that's why I say, especially in the beginning part of your career, like in whatever industry that you're in, find collaborative partners, build a strong referral network, which is a great, it's super easy to do going on other people's podcasts, because then you get to have conversation with potential referrals. It's super easy to do if you have your own podcast, because that is what your collaborators who are in that same, that second tier can be geared toward, is like, I want to have conversations with potential collaborators who I can then have affiliate partnerships with. And affiliate partnerships are wonderful, because then when you give them a referral, they give you money and you didn't have to do anything. It makes it really a really beautiful win-win-win solution, to go back to Stephen Covey, seven habits of highly effective people. Pregnancy brain, I swear it just struck.
My gosh. You know, that is like the first time I've ever heard that as how to monetize a podcast. And I absolutely love it. And I also love it as a way to even make it more fulfilling for you to use those three tiers of potential guests, right? The only one that I struggle with on it, like honestly, and I think when people listen to my podcast, they might know when I'm kind of biting my tongue, is when I have people on the podcast who should be getting some help with their marketing strategy, because I ask them what they're doing and it's not good. And so I instinctively want to go into coaching mode, because that's what I do. I coach people on obviously the brand strategy and their marketing strategy. But I also feel bad doing that publicly. Do you know what I mean? Like I don't want them, like they're on my show to talk about their story. And then I just ask them a couple questions about their marketing when I interview that type of guest. Do you preface and tell them in advance, I'm going to potentially like dig holes in your strategy?
A couple ways to strategize around that strategy is, one, you can have it in your pre-podcast form of letting people know that, you know, here's what I do. And if I hear this, it's of the highest benefit for my audience to hear a strategy in real time being built for someone of your success, of your caliber, of, you know, you've already created this success. And if I hear something, are you okay with me pointing it out publicly and in public, you know, publicly on the podcast? That is a simple question that they can answer a yes or no to. If they say no, you can always do it after, you know, you hit upload to the, you know, it finishes uploading. And then there's always that post conversation time where you say, I noticed in your form that you said no, so I didn't go there publicly on the show. But now that we're done, I'm curious, would you be open to a few of my suggestions, or just give like one, because you don't want to, you know, give away the farm, but like give one or a couple that you said, would you be open to having another conversation? I'm not sure of what your sales process is. You could give one post-podcast after the episode recording finishes, so they don't feel like shamed or guilty for having the quote-unquote wrong strategy, because people are so scared of being wrong.
Yeah.
Or B, if your sales process is to have a follow-up conversation or an initial conversation, then that's something that you could dive deeper in. I think this is where honoring your time really comes into play, and the subconscious structure of your own boundaries. Because if you have a certain amount of time, like I always allot for about
8 to 10 minutes after, just for potential follow-up questions, collaborations. You never know what can come from a podcast interview, because I always think of a podcast interview like a first date. Sometimes you want that first date to go longer. Like, yeah. I remember my first date with my husband. I was like, I had another date with somebody else the next morning. And I was like, but I could stay longer and we could keep having a really good conversation and we'll just see where this goes. And I ended up leaving his apartment because he cooked for me on his first date. That was his strategy.
Oh, okay.
Very successful. And obviously, he's my personal chef. But I wrote the foreword to his book called, called Food Game, A Man's Ultimate Recipe for Dating Success.
He's actually a chef.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he became a chef when we lived in Australia, because in order to, like, we had to stay in Australia because there were no flights going back home. But then for our visa, we were there for 3 months and we thought, well, this can't possibly last for 3 months. So we ended up saying, well, what if we stayed for longer? What if we intentionally stayed for longer and one of us had to go to school? And I was like, babe, currently running a business that is growing 300% in 2020. Yeah. And that was Crown Yourself. And I was like, no, I'm not going to business school. No, this is not happening. But I said, but what if you go to chef school? And his industry had completely shut down because he was a voice actor. And so that industry like shut down.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And that people ended up building home studios, but it took a minute. And he ended up recording the series that he's most famous for in a closet in Pimpama, like in Australia. But I said, why don't you go to chef school? Like, he's always wanted to do it. So he went to chef school. I got pregnant. I got to eat his homework. And I say that's a winning life strategy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh my gosh. I also cooked for my husband on our first date, but I'm not a good cook. And so I had lost a bet. So the bet was, I think it was a drinking game. We were young. So I used to act as well. And so if he won, then I would cook him a home cooked meal, which not my jam.
Yeah.
And if I won, he was going to rehearse my lines with me. And so he won. And so I went over to his place and I made this meal and the fire alarm goes off. It's like a nightmare. I made food he doesn't like. Now I know him and I know that he doesn't like what I had cooked, but we're still married. So he was okay with the fact that he was going to have to make the home cooked meals moving forward.
That's like the best. That's the best first date. It's like if you have everything go wrong on the first date and you're still together, you're golden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're going to hit our 22nd anniversary coming out pretty soon. Yeah.
That's so amazing. We are going on 13 years.
Very nice.
No, we are. Yeah, we are on 13 years. Yeah, going on 11 married in October. So
love it.
Yeah. Love it. I love too.
I want my husband to go to chef school because I love yummy food too.
Okay. Here's a life hack. There is a chef school that's really fun. It's called the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America.
Okay.
And they have classes all over, but they have one that is in Greece. So you could encourage a Grecian trip to go and explore the cuisine and he just gets to learn how to cook.
I think that's a great idea. I love it. Love the advice on the podcast. What's your book called again?
Make Every Podcast Want You, How to Become So Radically Interesting You'll Barely Keep from Interviewing Yourself.
Ooh, I love that. I'm going to get that book. And obviously, I'll put it in the show notes for everybody listening who wants to also get that book. So tell me about the Crown Yourself Self business.
So Crown Yourself Coaching stemmed from after I was bought out of my e-com business, which I didn't realize in the past. Prior to that business, I was audacious with my career goals. Like if I wanted something, I just went after it full gusto. I dropped out of college when I was 17, 2 weeks before I was supposed to start, with multiple scholarships to go to an acting class that James Franco and Sean Astin went to because I had an intuitive nudge that I was like, this is the place where I'm supposed to be. Fortunately, I have two entrepreneurial parents who very much supported that choice and who were like, we know you're a hustler. We know you're a hard worker. You have 4 years and you have the college savings. You use that for networking. You use that for classes. You use that for, you know, as you will. It was very fortunate. Like I am very honored. Both my parents were first generation entrepreneurs. And I think that is a really tough
place to be when you're that almost like the black sheep in your family, because my dad's entire family is former military. So like they don't understand, like, why would you go into something so risky? Like where, when, you know, the military offers some level of stability. I'm like, but you still go to war. Like that's risky.
Yeah, that's more risky, I would think.
That seems more risky to me, but you know, to each their own. And then my mom was very much from an educational space. So they thought I would, like, that side of the family thought I was crazy. And then like, you would drop out of college? Like, why? And I'm like, because I'm going to an acting class. But I went and I learned the business, and I went and I worked at agencies. I went and I worked as a script reader for several independent production companies. And I learned the business. I learned from the producers, the people who were actually in it, not from college professors who weren't actually doing the thing, mm-hmm. who were talking about theory rather than actually being in the grind. I was like, I want to learn by being in it. And I had the value of being young. And like, truth be told, in Hollywood, that is a value. And so I went and I studied and I was able to get the screenplay like picked up. I met my co-writing partner and director, Nick Parada, on a networking, at a networking event. We stayed in touch, the power of follow-up. So I learned all these very valuable business skills that I now still apply today. When I had my agency, everything I learned, like agency as in done for you agency, the way we used to have it structured, everything I learned from working as an intern at two of the top commercial agencies in Hollywood, we applied the same principles.
Yeah.
And so that there is power in every learning experience that you have. And that's why I say that just because your career path may be nonlinear, the skill sets that you build are universal. And look at the skill sets of leadership, communication, understanding people, persuasion, influence, courage, audacity. So fast forward to the audacity to say, I'm going to write a screenplay. Have I ever done it before? No. Like, I'm going to just give it a go. Get that produced, distributed, to the audacity of having, it was one of my dad's customers from his business. He had a back stretching device. And I saw that with my Pilates eyes because I'd trained for years as a Pilates instructor. I'd been in the studio for years teaching 60-hour weeks. And I saw, and I was like, I can sell that. I know exactly who to sell that to. And I said, as soon as I saw the product, I said, I don't just want to be a consultant. I want to be a president. I want to be a partner in this. And so we took that product and we got it into all the major magazines and onto Amazon. And I got to pitch it to the first round of Shark Tank auditions.
Oh my gosh.
But the problem was the subconscious structure of that business. My business partner and I just were not aligned in our values. And there were a couple orange flags that I had with him, and I'm sure he had a few with me, because I was very young. I was 24. And at that same time, I said, no, I'm going to, like every relationship, right? I'm going to just pretend that those don't exist because I believe in this product and this business. And that's not how the subconscious mind works. And that's not how the subconscious business structure works. So you have to understand the structure of the values that you're building the business on, especially if you're doing it in a partnership. And I learned that the hard way. And after 2 years, even with the success that we had, and the accolades and getting a doctor recommended by some of the biggest doctors that were working at some of the top hospitals for spinal rehabilitation. Like even with those successes, at the same time, my hair was literally falling out from stress. I was waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning in a panic over the fear that in a marketing email that I would send out with some grammatical errors would be redlined to hell, that with spell check and errors and all that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, because one of the things that I value as an entrepreneur is speed. But some entrepreneurs don't value speed as much. They value accuracy. And those are just different values. I'm not saying accuracy is not, like, you shouldn't be accurate, like absolutely be accurate. But if you value accuracy as your top number one value, then sending out anything that's not 100% perfect, worded exactly right, that's basically perfectionism. If you value that, then it's going to cost you speed.
Yeah.
Where if you value speed, and you value accuracy, it's just lower on the hierarchy, then you'll champion for speed and you'll make up and mea culpa in the interim.
Yeah.
But the shift in the value hierarchy caused after 2 years of working together as partners, my business partner wanted to buy me out. And I was like, okay. I initially fought for the company. And I was like, well, I've been the one actually actively going into studios and selling. So I think that has value. But that I fought for it. I fought for it a while. It was literally in the 3 months, Haley, leading up before my wedding. So
wow.
We signed the buyout agreement 3 weeks before I walked down the aisle because my husband looked at me, or my then fiance, and he goes, Kim, I do not want you taking this on our honeymoon. It's not worth it. And I was like, but it's my company and I poured 2 years of my heart and soul and energy into it. And in that buyout process, now in hindsight, I know that it was initially to lower my price. But I had the not nicest messages sent to me from very, you know, professional lawyers. Mm-hmm. And that scared me. I had, you know, people fear the legal ramifications of success. And I'm like, you get to a certain level, you're going to have to send a cease and desist. You're going to have to, you know, find a lawyer. You're going to like,
yeah,
it's going to happen. And that scared me. And it also scared me that these were professional men highlighting that I had no marketing background except for the school of hard knocks, that I didn't go to business school. My youth, my age, like all of it was used against me.
Wow.
And quite frankly, I'm so grateful for it, but I never saw those as flaws before. So I get off on my honeymoon, sign the buyout agreement, get the check. I'm like, okay, great. Hooray. And what am I going to do when we get back? And my husband was like, okay, well, let's brainstorm like you do on your honeyroon. Well, when you have 6 weeks in Airbnb.
Well, entrepreneurs do that on their honeymoons.
Exactly.
You can't especially turn it off.
You can't. And when you have 6 weeks alone with the love of your life in Italy, like, what aren't you, like, that's the time to plan for your future. And so I was like, wow, I have this total blank slate. And I looked at my life and I looked at the golden thread of like, what are those connecting dots, that through line that connects all the things that I'd been interested in between acting and producing and writing and Hollywood and helping people and transforming stories and storytelling and having some, like, entrepreneurship. I love entrepreneurship. I'm like programmed to not work for anybody else.
Yep.
And like world's worst employee except for my own companies. And I think that I looked at all of these things. And then I also looked at the past experience of going through that buyout process and going through the 2 years of working in a business that, as much as I loved going for these big audacious goals and achieving many of them, at the same time, it really was out of alignment. And that alignment piece was what I was missing. And I was like, it was out of alignment because it was out of alignment with my relationship. It was causing me to be frustrated, scattered, angsty all the time. And my husband, then fiance, thank God he stayed with me. He was like, I got you, but we need to work on you. And it took some time, but like after we were sitting on the couch, and I was also a beauty pageant queen, like I'd healed my body and I saw the toll that an unaligned business takes on your body. I gained like several pounds before, not that I care about weight anymore, like, but I was like, I saw a difference. I'd stopped working out. I'd stopped really caring for myself because everything I was pouring into this business. And that experience.
Did you know at the time, Kimberly, did you know at the time that it was out of alignment? Like the 2 years you were working in it, did you like come up with that in your mind, or did you just, upon reflection, you realize that, wow.
No, I had the intuitive nudges along the way.
Okay.
I definitely had the intuitive nudges, and it's like your intuition whispers until it like screams.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I had some intuitive nudges even before. I remember a meeting when me and my former business partner, before we actually went into partnership, we sat at Starbucks and we said, like, let's like dive deep and be vulnerable with each other. If we're going to go into businesses, essentially, kind of like you're getting into bed with someone and you kind of want to know someone before you actually go into business. We shared some of our insecurities, our experiences. And there was one thing that he shared that was just, I was like, orange flag. And I'm, like I said, I'm sure he had a few with me. But at that time, and then throughout the process, there were many cases of me devaluing my worth, of me not using my voice. Interesting, as I say this with laryngitis. But me not using my voice, me not standing up for what I believed or like really using, and me also not skilling up as fast as I needed to, quite frankly. Like there were skill sets in communication, influence, negotiation that and sales that I needed to be better in, and I wasn't improving as fast as I needed to.
Okay.
And I was improving really hard and like stumbling and falling along the way. But it was in those spaces. It was especially in the space of devaluing myself.
Mm.
And that's one that I commonly see. And I didn't quite learn that lesson, even with the nice big buyout check. I didn't quite learn that lesson because as soon as I came back with a great idea from Italy, I leaped off the couch and said, crown yourself. And my husband goes, what's that? And I said, that's the name of my company. He says, well, what do you do? And I said, I think it's something like Marie Forleo. And he was like, okay, well, what's that? And I was like, I don't know. Let me just buy the domain. Let me buy the YouTube. Like, let me get all the assets in place. Let me do this with no clarity, except for I have the name. We're going to go with the name. Let me buy all the film equipment. Let me buy, you know, the trademark and all that. Let me get the logo designed. And I went for it and I did all the things. And for a year and a half, I made no money in my business. Like, and by no money, I mean $115. That was all I made. Okay. Like, it was nothing. And I knew that I needed I didn't believe in myself, that I didn't believe in my Pilates studio that I'd had for years. I didn't believe that even that could sustain me because I continued having my Pilates studio with just a handful of clients while I ran the e-com business.
Yeah.
But I didn't believe that that would even sustain me. I didn't believe in myself enough because that buyout process caused me to doubt my own audacity and my intuition and everything. And I'm so grateful for it now, but I didn't view being bought out as a success. And now when I tell founders, they're like, wait, you had a successful exit? And I'm like, I know I did. I know I did. And at the same time, I saw it as a failure. I felt like I'd lost my company.
Right.
And that really taught me the value of perception. And when we can look through the lens of like, what is the perception in which you're viewing this? Because that shapes everything.
Right.
And that when I shifted my perception was when I found out I was pregnant because I looked at the past year and a half of actual outcomes and results. And what I had was a really glittery turd of a business. It was sparkly on the outside. Man, the brand photo shoots, gorgeous. But the money and the revenue, cash flow, profit, non-existent. Revenue, non-existent.
That's so important too, because I think a lot of other business owners and listeners probably see businesses out there that look shiny. They see the sparkles and they're like, they're doing it. Why can't I? But you don't know what actually is happening behind closed doors. You could have a business like mine who I barely market my business, but I'm making money, right? Because I don't have time to market it anymore because I'm doing the other side. But then you have another marketer potentially or whoever's in your industry who looks like they're just like rocking it. But really, they don't have anything going on behind that sparkle. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's great.
My bestie, Amanda Kaufman.
For you at the time, but great for people to hear. Yeah.
It's great to hear. It sucks when you're in it. But at the same time, that comparisonitis is so common. And I think one of the best pieces of advice I actually got from my bestie, Amanda Kaufman, she's an amazing business coach for coaches. And she said, she calls it the 20% rule. And she goes, everything you're seeing online, maybe tops you're seeing 20%.
Mm.
So you're seeing, you don't see that 80% of what's behind the scenes. You don't see the struggles that they're going through. You don't see the cash flow crunch. That's why now that I'm on the other side of that cash flow and revenue crunch, or not revenue crunch, but cash flow and profit crunch that we had in Q2 and Q3 that stacked up into like exploding my business and pivoting our model in Q4. Like even as an experienced business owner, I had it. But now I share about it because I think it's very important to for women especially, because honestly, there are studies shown on generational programming. And we as women have only been allowed, at least in Western culture and mostly in America, to make money for the past 200 years. There's a very big generational programming that men have, and this isn't saying men are right or bad. It's like it's just different. And there is a group that I've been a part of for several years now. It's called The Dames. It's for 6, 7, and 8-figure business owners. And I got into a room with business women making 2K and upwards of like multiple millions. And I'm sitting in this room and I just gotten off a conversation with my board, and my board is my husband and my mom. Those are my board members.
Yeah.
And I got off a conversation with my mom and I was crying because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I literally was looking at the P&L and I was like, this sucks. Like, this sucks. We're having high revenue and higher expenses. And it was so hard. I walked into this conference and there were two tracks that you could take for this. Excuse me, let me just take a drink. There were two tracks that you could take. There was one that was like sexy PR and marketing and like how to be visible and brandable and get your business out there. Everyone went to that one. The other one had maybe 10 business owners in it.
Yeah.
And it was all about bookkeeping and HR. I was like, that's the one I'm going to. And I'm sitting there with these successful women. Every woman in that room was making 250K or up, upwards of a million. Every single one had the same problem. The same, like, I don't know, like questioning, I don't know if I'm going to make payroll in the next 2 weeks, and feeling the shame and the guilt. And I think that's a benefit of having coming from entrepreneur parents, because and being a second generation entrepreneur, because there's a bigger understanding around that. And it was really interesting. I was having a conversation prior to that with my mom of like we were having a payroll crunch. And I was like, Mom, I don't know how I'm going to make payroll in the next month. And she was like, oh, a month? She goes, Kimmy, there were some times we didn't know if we were going to hit payroll by Friday. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm not in as bad a spot as I thought.
That's so stressful.
Oh my God, it's so stressful. But I mean, it's like their industry was very seasonal. She was my parents were arborists. And so sometimes, but in that time, they would dial for dollars. They would do anything that they could, like anything within, you know, ethical and moral boundaries.
Yeah.
They would contact their past customers. They would ask for referrals and they would be like, here's the hustle crunch. And then they would pray. And that was literally their strategy. And every time they would hit payroll, every time. And my mom was the first one to actually teach me manifestation in a way. She doesn't know she did this, but she says, Kim, you just have to pray for it as if it's already happened. So she goes, how can you share that, you know, with gratitude that it's already done and like trust that it's going to be provided for? And I was like, yeah, didn't believe her for like 20 years. And I was like, and now I'm like, oh no, that's 100% like sometimes how it rolls. And really being in looking at, yes, the circum, like I think there's a lot of talk in the manifestation and mindset world in business. And I see this specifically with female entrepreneurs, some with men, but more so with female. Is, you know, just manifest it and invest before you're ready. And you have to spend money to make money. And I'm like, that is some bullshit. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Like, I think that there is discernment with buying. There is an understanding of profit. There is an understanding of cash flow. There is an understanding of operational expenses. And yes, also simultaneously, see it how you want to see it. Trust in those intuitive nudges. Lean in. Constantly check yourself in your alignment with, are you taking those courageous actions that you need to take? More often when I see clients now in my Crown Yourself coaching company and they're struggling with sales, normally it's because they're avoiding something. It could be because it's because they're avoiding really looking at their numbers. It could be they're avoiding having that confronting conversation with the client who's a pain in their butt. It could be that they're avoiding putting themselves out there in a new vertical. It's normally attached to avoidance. And the key way to when in the spiritual world, they say, raise your vibe. How you raise it is you raise it through courage. Courage is actually an energetic vibration. Fear, anger, guilt, and shame, especially when you're thinking, who am I to do this? Mm-hmm. That's shame talking. If you're feeling guilt of like, I feel so bad about charging for my services.
Yeah.
That's guilt. And I'm like, who are you not to charge for your services? If you don't charge for your services, someone with less integrity is going to get their business. And I bet they won't deliver as well as you will on your services, on what you do.
Yeah, so guilt is a big one for me, too.
Yeah,
not so much in how much I charge or charging, but guilt of being successful when maybe other people aren't, or guilt in I'm so blessed, so I feel guilt for
you know, having a good husband, having great kids, having like, it's so weird.
Can I poke a hole in
that? That's where the guilt comes in for me. And I was at a, kind of like a card reader kind of thing with one of my friends in BC. And she nailed it. She's like, oh, you got so much guilt. And I'm like, but it's that kind of thing. It's when if I have something, I feel guilt for having it.
Yeah.
And so that's probably playing out in my business in like a plateau, right? I've just hit a certain level and I'm like, okay, well, I'm good here and I'm not going to push anymore. And you know what I mean?
100% that's playing out. Like I would bet 100% that's playing out. How long have you had the guilt for?
My whole life. My whole life, I feel bad for having anything good.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah. Three. Two sisters that are like I'm the youngest and we're like each a year apart. And then I have an older brother as well.
Dr. Gay Hendricks has an interesting theory around those problems. He calls them an upper limit problem. And there's one that it sounds like is the one that's hitting you. And it's the fear of outshining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's guilt. But it sounds like there's also that fear that's rooted in childhood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had that conversation with people as well. For sure. That was a big part of my childhood. I definitely downplayed things my whole childhood so that everybody would be equal in every respect.
If you were to be really honest, like, are you a little bit more successful than them?
No, I'm not. No, like, we're successful in different ways. So one of my sisters is a professor, a math professor. Mm-hmm. Very successful. And my other sister is a vice president at a school. They're just in different fields. But when we were younger, like I was the sporty one and just the things that like, I don't know, I just felt guilt and I've talked to them about it. They're like, we never thought anything, right? One of my sisters was the smart one. So if I made good grades, I didn't want people to know because she was the smart one, not me. But I really was actually quite smart. So.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you've built an incredibly successful business.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. People are like, there's just so much, right? With every person that you just don't see where people are. But anyways, very, very interesting. So you talk about this stuff with your clients in terms of like what's kind of holding you back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, I love and I so honor how vulnerable you are on your own podcast with sharing your own fears, your own guilts, your own experiences, because I think that's so necessary for women to just have those conversations. And yes, that is something that I work with my clients on is really looking at those subconscious underliers. And I always tell my clients, I'm never going to take away your motivation strategy. Because for many successful entrepreneurs, fear can be an incredibly strong motivator. But we want to look at, is it a motivator for where you're going? Mm-hmm. Like it may have made you successful up until this point, but it also is potentially capping where you can go if you chose maybe a new belief system.
Right.
To let that go.
We love Kimberly for coming on the podcast, like just getting over being sick. She's like, I'm coming. So
we have had this on the books for a long time. So like, I want to make sure I'm doing my best to not cough, but like, you know, Haley, like coming from an acting background and like I come from a musical theater background, like that was what I loved growing up as a child. So I was a musical theater nerd and a dancer in my childhood.
Nice.
There is a level of heart. I have danced on so many sprained ankles. There's a level of push through that you just like get when you are in that environment. I was in my high school production of Working and I had one song and I had crippling laryngitis, like could not say or speak a note. And somehow I got on that stage and I sang the entire song. And every time, night after night, three nights in a row. And my best friend was like, I have no idea how you did that. Like, you literally have not been able to talk for a week. It just, like, there's a showing up factor. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say, like, 90%, like, famous director, directed Midnight in Paris, lost on me at this moment. Woody Allen said 80% of success is showing up. I say it's 90. Because quite frankly, if you just show up for those opportunities, you'll be shocked at what, but you have to have the courage to show up and not look at the circumstances of your excuses. Like, I will sometimes cancel an interview, especially if it, like, it's involving one of my kids. Like, if one of my kids is sick, I'm like, no, sorry, mama. Yeah. Mama's on board.
Priorities.
And I will do it if I really felt like my health, my long-term health was at risk 100%. But I was like, no, I'll be good by Tuesday. So here I am.
Well, I appreciate it. Okay. So what would you give to, say, somebody starting out? Because it seems like you just jumped in, like you jumped into the Pilates. You're kind of like fearless. So I know that there's a lot of people who don't jump in. And my listeners definitely know my story was I wanted to be an entrepreneur a decade before I actually took the plunge and did it. So how do you jump in, or how did you do it? I know it's probably part of you, but like, what advice would you give to somebody who's like a little hesitant to be like, I'm going to try something that I'm not sure if it's going to work?
So there's a perception of risk involved, right? And I think COVID taught us all a very valuable lesson. And AI is teaching it to us once again, is that success is never certain. Nothing is guaranteed. So many people lost their jobs in 2020. So many people are losing their jobs now because of AI. Mm-hmm. But I remember because I was in Australia and I was living in a tourist town, and I saw people getting their, you know, losing their businesses that they had spent time, energy, money building. And I looked at them and I said, I guarantee you, you'll build it back in half the time. And they said, how are you so certain? I said, because you have mastered one of the most important skill sets that anyone can master. Persuasion. If you know how to sell, that is a skill set that will take you into starting anything. I was like, I told one business owner, he had a rental car shop and he went from multiple locations to one location to one employee, and that was himself. It just, everything shrunk down. And I said, you could start an Etsy shop. And I guarantee you'd get to that level of income and success just in probably half the time because you have the skill set of persuasion. You understand customer acquisition. You understand lead generation. You understand putting yourself out there and facing rejection. And yes, I get it. It's scary. I get it. And it's so scary when you feel that soul calling, because initially, when you get rejected or someone says no to your services, it feels personal. Mm. But the more you end up detaching yourself and your own identity from the results that your business is producing, the more successful you will become.
Interesting. Can you repeat that? I need to hear that again.
The more you detach yourself and your identity from the results that your business is producing, the more successful you become.
Interesting. Why and do not you say that?
It's not a detachment in terms of avoidance. It's not meaning you avoid the tough things. It means that you embrace, you approach those tough challenges, but you don't make the customer complaint about you. You take the feedback. You say, okay, well, apparently this customer wasn't a right fit for my services or my product. Okay, what was mine? What was the business's? What was the product or the service? Like, maybe it was a communication thing. Okay, wow. How can we create an SOP to then better communicate? So a standard operating procedure. How can we create a better an SOP to stay on top of our clients for getting their deliverables? How can we, and that was one of the things with our agency that we had to constantly adapt. Like, how can we create a contractual, like one of the things that we added into our contracts? And now having consulted four podcast producers who are adding guesting and like done for you agency services to their mix, I'm like, add this into your contract. Have a response time deadline. And because for us, where we saw the operation cost lag was we would get our clients booked on a podcast. They wouldn't respond for 5 days. They would come back and say, yeah, I'm available. Well, that podcast slot time is taken. So then we'd get them another time. They'd take another 3 days to respond. And then that podcast time wouldn't be available. So that back and forth cost thousands of dollars.
Yes.
versus just building it into the contract versus just building it into the contract of saying, you have 3 days to respond, and then creating a communication with the podcaster saying, our clients are required to get back with us within 3 days. We will let you know within 3 days. Please hold the spot for them for 3 days.
Yeah.
That way you set boundaries. But it wasn't of like, poor me, I'm such a bad business owner, I did this. It's not about that. It was like, no, let's separate these two. Mm-hmm. So the more you de-identify yourself, like Etsy, especially with business owners who are doing, you know, 10 to 20K months, where they're so attached, especially when you're in service-based industries, where it's marketing services, consultative services, coaching, healing modalities. When you're in those modalities, there's a personal energy that you're putting into it. But the same is true if you created a product. But imagine that what you are selling is a productized service. Mm-hmm. And just like with acting, I'm sure you experience as well, like when you are attached to that role or that outcome of like, oh, it's this part or nothing. Well, then just like any relationship, there's a level of desperation then in that identity. And there's a level of performance of like, oh, I feel like I have to perform at this level in order for this to be achieved, versus setting a standard of excellence and saying, here's my standard of excellence. Ideally, a client providing regular real-time feedback will allow me to raise that standard of excellence so we have a new floor. But at the same time, if a client is not satisfied with the service or if sales are not going a certain way, it's not because of me. Maybe it's because of my niche. There are a million, like literally when it comes to sales, there are at least 1,000 different reasons other than just being you that are the reason why that person said no.
Right.
They legitimately have an excuse of like, they are not financially ready to invest $15,000 into your program. Like that is a big commitment. And I think we've gone through in 2020 and 2021, that like big coaching push of like high ticket. Like I still do high ticket. That's primarily what I do. But at the same time, if I have a question where I like genuinely want to know my client's income, gross and net, before they invest with me, so I can guide them in that conversation and say, like, I have turned clients down where I'm like, I don't think your profit is there to make this investment yet. Let's build a strategy so that you can get to that place, so that in 3 months' time, we get to have another conversation, but I'm not going to force a sale on you out of scarcity, where then you feel like you now have to perform at this level,
yeah.
But it's all push, it's not flow. It's all force. And the thing is, with our unconscious minds are happy in a space of homeostasis. They like to be, it likes to be safe. So how to persuade the unconscious mind, which runs 95% of the programming that we have, into a new level of success is literally, you have to coerce it like a lover, not like you're going to like coerce it or like a drill sergeant.
Right.
You have to treat it like a lover, like, hey, baby, I got you. Like, I know you're safe at this level. I know. But you know what? I know you're feeling that guilt and shame, and you're feeling a little bit of fear of like outshining. But you know what? It's like, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're just going to challenge ourselves to shine a little brighter. What would it look like if I shine just 10% brighter? And treating it like a lover, not like, you better shine 10% brighter and like make 10% more. I'm like, no, thank you. The unconscious mind, it needs to be nurtured. Mm. And it's very distracted by the five senses, by circumstances. So what we see, the numbers are in our P&L, the numbers are in our bank balance. The numbers on the, you know, the number on our scale, like what we see, it influences the subconscious mind. It goes, oh no, I'm safe here. I understand what having, you know, only $1,000 in my bank account feels like. Like, okay, I'm safe here. Even though I made this much, I'm safe here. I can make enough and then I can go back to this space. Like, I'm safe in this range, versus saying, you know, hey, subconscious mind, like, let's just feel into like play with imagination. What would it feel like if maybe there was $10,000 always in your bank account? Oh, no, too scary. Oh, okay. All right. That's fine. Don't even worry about it. What if it was like 2,000, $2,000 regularly, always in your bank account. You never have to worry. Like, it's always there. Like, it never goes below. It never dips. How would that feel? And the subconscious mind goes, okay. I don't know. Let's play with it. Mm-hmm. And so asking what or how questions, and then leveraging your imagination, and then leveraging the feeling of what it would be like as if, not acting as if and going out on a spending spree and saying, I always have $2,000 in my bank account. No. But being able to like, you don't have to go out and like shop Lamborghinis. Like, you just like, let's stick to nurturing the subconscious mind. And what would it feel like if I actually did? And then playing with like, okay, well, what's my next courageous move? It's really, and then looking at, well, what am I avoiding?
I love that question. What is my next courageous move? Do you ask yourself that a lot? Because you've done so much. You must ask yourself that all the time.
All the time. And it helps that I have a community called The Collective, where literally I am like, my promise as a product promise is that I deliver a courageous activation every week to that community. And so I promise them that courageous activation. And then I have to share vulnerably what I am doing courageously. Cool. So I lead by example. I'm not like preaching it. I'm going to be like, but I'm just going to sit here and here's my list of everything I'm avoiding.
You guys are going to do this. I'm just going to sit here and watch my show.
I'm just going to sit here and watch K-pop Demon Hunters for the fifth time in 4 days because I was lying on the couch for the previous three. But the thing is, it's really looking at what's that next courageous move. And you will only know your next courageous move by making a list of everything that you're actually avoiding.
Oh, I love that.
Maybe it's sales. Maybe it's returning that phone call to that potential customer. Maybe it is, like I said, maybe it's canceling that contract with that really naggy client. Maybe it is reaching out and asking for that referral. Maybe it's asking for that testimonial. Maybe it's asking for, oh my God, a second sale from that customer. They have already paid you once. Maybe ask for another. So being able to look at that list of everything and get like, really go sit down after this episode today or in your journal, make your list of everything that you're avoiding. When you can look at that list, then you have your action plan. What's the next courageous move? Go on to that list. Do the list.
Gold. Are you listening to her? This is just gold. I love that. All the things you're avoiding becomes your action plan. Oh my gosh. I've never heard that before. I really like that. Okay.
And I would recommend, though, starting with the one that generates the most revenue.
Okay. Yeah.
And sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you don't know, but go with your intuition. And like, you may be avoiding the conversation with your mother-in-law, but if you're looking at it from a business standpoint, is that really the conversation that's going to move the needle in sales?
Are you psychic? Because I was avoiding a conversation with my mother-in-law. She doesn't listen to this podcast, so we're fine. I can continue to avoid it. Will.
And I will until another time.
And that's going to stay on the list for a long time.
It's looking at like, but you know, you never know, Haley, what could move the needle. Maybe it is that thing. If it isn't like a pebble in your shoe, and I know this as a marathon runner, a pebble in your shoe for a while, you're like, oh, okay, I can run on this for a little bit. That's fine. After a while, though, there is a gaping open wound that you're running on. And it's looking at how many miles will you tolerate running with that gaping open wound that's saying like, please bandage me up. And that's what avoidance does. And so I would recommend, this is not me coaching you, but I would just recommend, suggest, perhaps, okay, have that conversation at some point and then look at what could happen to your business. Because sometimes it's not linear. Sometimes it could be an exponential thing. Because when you address that thing that's like really annoying, no offense, mom-in-law, but when you address that thing that's really annoying,
yeah,
that actually allows you the space to like, it gives you emotional freedom and it can catapult that courage.
That's interesting. Yeah. And yeah. Okay. I love this. Kimberly, we could talk for hours, I'm sure. I'm just finding the conversation fascinating. I'm sure my guests are also finding it fascinating. So would you like to share any other little tidbit before we close it off?
My personal philosophy that I feel like I love to suggest, like try it on, like a different type of outfit. Like try it on. And it is this philosophy That which is conscious manifests happily. That which is unconscious manifests unhappily. If there's something in your circumstances that is unhappily manifesting, and by that I mean it is emotionally activating you in some way negatively, and it's starting to grate, or there's like that low-level frustration, that low-level annoyance, maybe some simmering anger, those things are opportunities to address, to bring them to consciousness so that you can heal and have greater wholeness. And maybe it's something in your sales. Maybe it's something that is, you know, a mother-in-law. Maybe it is something in your marketing strategy. And it's like, oh, I don't know how. Well, those low-level things are presented to you at just the right time because your unconscious mind is like, I might be ready. Maybe she's ready now. Maybe she's ready now to deal with it. And if you're not, that's totally fine. But then it'll just go back because the unconscious mind represses things that you're not ready. But it'll bring them up when it's like, maybe she's ready to deal with this.
Oh, interesting.
So when you have those presented, then look at it as an opportunity to create greater wholeness. And so I just live by that one simple philosophy. That which is conscious manifests happily, and that which is unconscious manifests unhappily. So anytime something unhappy happens, and it does happen quite a bit, not perfect, and currently have 3 beautiful children and two of them are rowdy boys. And being able to say, well, how is this? What do I get to shift? What do I get to heal within me so that I heal my projection, so that I heal what's happening outside of me?
Mm.
And that we have that superpower as creators of our own life when my agency, that happened, I was like, well, this is clearly a sign because this is something I'm very not happy with.
Yeah.
I looked at it and I said, well, let's look at alignment. And I said, oh my God, as soon as I felt aligned, I said, this is this model. And it was presented right in front of me by a client who was closing out his contract. And he said, maybe it's your model. And I was like, oh crap, why'd you have to say the truth? Because I knew it because it pissed me off.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And it's like that quote from Ted Lasso that the therapist gives. And it's one of my favorites. And she said, the truth will set you free, but first it's going to piss you off.
Yeah.
And when you notice those things that piss you off, it's like, oh, there's some truth in that. That's why judgment pisses us off. That's why rejection pisses us off. That's why, you know, guilt, it pisses us off that, oh my God, I'm feeling guilty about this again. Because it's there to say there's something true in there that you get to now heal.
Mm.
And when you integrate that and you reweave that subconscious thread, then now you have a new platform and a new structure to stand on that can actually grow to be more fruitful, more fulfilling, more meaningful, more prosperous,
right,
more abundant. So try that belief system on. See if it fits.
I will. And I hope everybody listening also tries it on. Thank you so much, Kimberly. It has been an absolute pleasure talking to you.